Hey Books with Aaron, Polly, and Andrew. I'm Aaron.
This is Paul.
And I am Andrew.
You know, guys, I picked up a book this week. It's a Star Trek art book. It's 50 artists, 50 years. It was for the 50-year anniversary of Star Trek, from about 10 years ago. And it's a gorgeous book. And, you know, each artist gets like a big 2-page spread, and, you know, they show an they highlight a large example of a particular piece of art, and then they, you know, have some other smaller images. Sometimes they're like thumbnails of what they were working on, shows the process, that kind of thing. Anyway, it's just a fantastic book. And one of the things I was surprised by in the book is, you know, I just kind of suspected that it would be all illustrators, right? That it would be, you know, print media. And there were actually like sculptors, you know, wood carvers, you know, in there. So, you know, all different types of artists. And I was like, wow, I really appreciate how they, you know, kind of stretched that boundary, you know, and how they represent. But I have to strongly object about one featured artist in the book. And it is Mayim Bialik cosplaying. And she's, quote, a photographer of her cosplay. And her cosplay is her dressed up as different Star Trek characters. And I'm like, you know, there are actual legitimate cosplay artists out there, even some Star Trek ones that I'm familiar with, who've, you know, published books and whatnot on their cosplay as Star Trek characters, and are just, you know, really, you know, model photographers, you know, in that genre. Mayim Bialik is not one of them. And I feel like they were trying to bring in perhaps the Big Bang Theory audience to buy this book, because there is nothing artful about the photograph that they share for her. You know, certainly, you know, the cosplay is effective, but it is rather basic in terms of the cosplay and the representation. And I was just like, oh, this is terrible. I feel like you owe me 1/50th of the cost of this book back because of the choice of this artist. I was just rather incensed by it.
So how many pages is taken up of pictures of Mayim Bialik in different costumes?
It's 2 pages. Each artist gets 2 pages.
And
she's dressed as Kirk, Spock, Yeoman Rand, and then there's one of her as Commander Data.
That seems a little random.
Uh-huh. Yeah. It is. Yeah, and not like I said, not very artful. I mean, like the photography itself is just almost looks like it was taken with your iPhone. You know, there's not a lot of real artistry involved. I mean, I think that the closest claim you could make is, you know, maybe there's some makeup and costume art involved. Certainly not the photography. And she's labeled as a photographer in this, and I'm like, I'm sorry. I think there's more artful things happening on my Instagram feed. You know,
right. I mean, I like Blossom, but that doesn't sound like what I would be looking for in a Star Trek art book.
But there are, I mean, like I was talking about the sculpture and wood carvings and whatnot. There is a wooden Enterprise, the original series Enterprise. That is a wood sculpture in this book that's just gorgeous. And, you know, like J.K. Woodard's in here, Paul. You know, and I really half expected to see most of these artists being from the comics. But they are actually like several fine artists in here, like Paul Oz, that are, you know, big Star Trek fans and whatnot. I'll say that there's one thing missing, and I feel like Bialik took this space, is that Boris Vallejo is not present in this book.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, Boris Vallejo did the covers to all the Star Trek novels back in the day, the pocketbook Star Trek novels. And I'm like, he was huge. And he was the reason why those books initially started selling. And then, you know, the books themselves, you know, delivered. But the it was so eye-catching off the shelf, and I just can't believe that they didn't have any of the Boris artwork in the book. And it sounds like I'm complaining a lot about this book. This book is gorgeous. It's a lovely coffee table book. Highly recommend it. But let me tell you, my Amazon review is withering about the presence of Mayim Bialik in it. Withering.
Poor Mayim. She just wants to show her fandom, and Aaron is so unappreciative.
How many stars did you give it? Did you give your review?
I gave it 4 stars. I couldn't give it 5.
Okay.
Just saying.
All right.
It's a lovely book. Well, I really do. I love it. And it's nice and oversized. It's good stuff.
I'm looking at it right now online. It does look very nice.
It is really just a gorgeous book. And the problem with it is that there are images in there that you just want to rip out and frame. You know, I'm just like, I need this on the wall.
Grab your X-Acto knife, get to work.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So well, I understand you're caught up on the Starfleet Academy.
My God, Aaron. Oh my God.
And Paul still hasn't watched a single episode.
I've watched a single episode, and it's not because I'm opposed. Let me just, you know, preface this. It's not because I'm anti Starfleet Academy. We talked about this already. I'm just, I've right now there's just so many hours in a day, and I've for some reason I committed to a Sleepy Hollow rewatch before I started anything new, and our evening entertainment right now is shrinking on Apple TV. So I haven't quite gotten to Starfleet Academy, but it's coming. It's coming. I'm almost through Sleepy Hollow season 1.
I finished my Ted Lasso rewatch last night.
Ooh, okay. That's a good one. That's one I want to do, but I haven't had time yet.
Yeah. You got to hurry.
You're ready. You're ready for season 4 later this year.
Season 4 is coming.
I know. I'm very, very excited. But yeah, Star Trek, I'd gotten a little behind with the Olympics. And so over the past week, caught up on the 3 episodes I hadn't seen. And I got to say, you were quite happy, excited about the Cisco episode. And it was fantastic.
It was, wasn't it? It was so well written. I thought that was a fantastic episode. Tell me what you thought. Talk to me all about it.
Well, you know, they're kind of doing these different episodes that kind of feature different characters. And that one, of course, featured Sam. And I love seeing her dive into what it means to be an envoy from her people to, you know, another people. In this case, being, you know, Starfleet Federation. So, I just really wish Avery Brooks had been alive so that he could have done some sort of cameo or flashback or something in this episode, because I think it would have been.
Avery Brooks is alive, isn't he?
He is.
Is he?
Yes.
Yeah, he is. I don't think people work with him anymore, but I do believe. I think he's dead to them.
Yeah,
but
he doesn't. He does not make himself available for anything related to Star Trek anymore. But yeah, he is 77 years old.
I did know he was a little crazy from the captain's documentary, but yeah. Okay. He's still alive. He's 77. Yeah. I really thought he had passed away a couple of years ago.
Yeah. And I think he's still teaching. He does not participate in the Hollywood stuff anymore. Other than he did participate in the production of that episode. He did the voice recording at the end. And
did he?
Yeah. And he apparently approved the script because Tawny Newsome, who wrote the story, did not approach him directly, but had them present the script to him. And he, you know, kind of gave his blessing because she didn't want to do it. She and Kristen Beyer, one of the other producers on the show, didn't want to do it unless he was supportive of the work.
Well, that's very good to know. Sorry, I was wrong about that. Yeah. So still alive, Avery Brooks. I thought they just pulled that recording off of the original that was in the original series somewhere.
Yeah, I wondered the same, but I watched a small video of behind the scenes on it, and they talked about how he did that for them.
And then, you know, next episode was the ambush at the ship graveyard, which was tense. It was dramatic. One of my favorite characters is currently off the board as a result of it. The Beta Zed. I'm blanking on her name. But and then this last episode, you kind of seen the fallout and how that's affecting Caleb. Mm-hmm. And kind of what he does with this enforced downtime when all he has to do is think, and then you learn a little bit more about Genesis as well. So I was a little hesitant on this show after the first episode or two, especially because it was mainly because it was based in this far future Discovery timeline. Mm-hmm. But I'm every episode, I think I like the series more.
Yeah, it's I gotta say, of all Trek, the exception of season three of Picard, I think it's the best written. I'm very much appreciating, like, for instance, the different style in episodes. You know, they're it feels more like Berman era or 90s era Trek than Star Trek has previously felt in the modern era. I'm enjoying the more traditional feel of it, and I'm getting a kick out of that. So I go ahead.
I was literally yelling at my television this past week at Caleb, like, send the message, send the message. What is wrong with you? Send the message.
Yeah, his Betazoid girlfriend's just entirely too cute. I mean, she's just and that's my objection to the show, is that I feel like such a creepy old man. because, you know, all of the actors are just as cute as they can be. And I'm, you know, there are, you know, you're watching Caleb, and I cannot remember her name.
Me neither.
But, you know, his Betazoid girlfriend, she's just as cute as she can be. And so is Genesis. Genesis is awfully cute. And I'm just like, you know, this is just, you know, wrong. I shouldn't be, you know, noting how cute these, you know, people, so many years my junior.
It's kind of hard when, what, two episodes ago in the ambush episode, where it starts with what was probably maybe, is it the most graphic depiction of intimacy we've seen on a Star Trek show?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was, I was so surprised that I looked at my wife, I was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
They're having this on Star Trek?
You know, it's like I said, when we were talking about the shower scene where they had the co-ed showers, and I'm like, wait a minute, are we about the Starship Troopers this thing?
All right, yes, right.
Because we didn't, by the way, but I thought for sure that we were going to get to see some a lot of good hot showering. That's what I was looking for. Some good hot sonic showering.
And now we're back to creepy old man.
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
I don't know that we ever left it, really.
I found my niche. But yeah, I gotta say, I am super enjoying Starfleet Academy. But it did put me to wondering, you know, Mary Wiseman was supposed to star in Starfleet Academy. You know, she played, Tilly from Discovery, and she left the Discovery show, and, you know, they said for the longest time, oh yeah, she's gonna be in Starfleet Academy, she's, you know, gonna be one of the main instructors. And of course, she has not been present in the show, nor have I seen any publicity about it. So I did a little research last, and she's still supposedly going to be in an episode this season. So I'm guessing, you know, in the next couple of weeks, if we're gonna see her, we're gonna see her. But apparently there were, and I'm going to throw this up in air quotes because I believe it's bullshit, there were scheduling conflicts that she couldn't do the season as originally anticipated. And I'm sorry, I don't buy that for a minute. I think something happened behind the scenes. I have no idea what that is. You know, I don't know if it was creative differences or, you know, what have you, but somebody made a decision that, you know, she would not participate. And it could have been her decision, it could have been their decision, who knows. But they were very loud about Mary Wiseman previously, and they were very quiet about Mary Wiseman.
Well, I have really enjoyed Tig Notaro being on the show.
Oh, yeah, I love Tig.
Discovery, yeah, she has been great as one of the professors, so.
Yeah.
Even in this most recent one where she discovers that we overhear her having an argument because she hurt her big toe and her partner's going on about, I've broken three ribs, I've had this done. And Tig's like, well, it's my big toe. It really hurts.
Yeah. No, I love Tig Notaro. I would be happy for her to do a solo Star Trek show, and it's just her talking to a computer throughout the entire episode. I think she's hysterical.
Agreed.
Yeah, it is amazing to me that it took so many episodes of modern Star Trek for them to figure out how to write it. But they finally found their zone. And I'm very, as much as I hate this far future setting, I very much enjoy this show and these characters. The actors are, I mean, just like every other modern Star Trek show, the casting's fantastic. But now they finally have scripts worth reading. So happy about that.
Agreed.
Yep.
Well, I'll get caught up at some point. At some point in the
future. I don't have any faith in you, Paul. I don't.
Oh, I wouldn't.
You're too shallow a vessel.
I mean, we've got new Taylor Sheridan stuff starting anytime now. I mean, he's got like two new shows starting next month, so I wouldn't count on it. Between Marshalls and the one with Kurt Russell, and then Monarch. I mean, it's going to be all Kurt Russell all the time starting in March. I genuinely don't know when Starfleet Academy is going to happen.
It's okay, Paul. I'm just sitting here quietly judging you. Don't worry about it.
And me not so quietly judging you.
Yeah.
Well, I'm judging you out loud.
So much judging. But there's so many new comics coming out that I also don't know when I'm going to have time to do any of that stuff. Because this week was Comics Pro, and a ton of announcements have come out of Comic Pro. A couple of big ones I wanted to mention, you know, while we're on the podcast. One of the biggest ones that I'm very excited about is Terminal, which is a new superhero comic book from Robert Kirkman and Joe Casey from Skybound. And he has three artists who are known for being late, basically taking turns on the book so it stays on time. But he's got Andy Kubert, David Finch, and Arthur Adams.
Oh, man.
As the rotating art crew.
That is a murderer's row of artists.
Yeah. I am 1,000% on board. I hope it's good. Robert Kirkman, I mean, I'm enjoying what he's doing currently. You know, he hasn't done much superhero work since Invincible, but I'm totally on board with checking this book out when it comes out in July.
Same.
Andrew, Mask number one, spinning out of G.I. Joe, comes in June.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Transformers. Yeah,
but it's all in the same world. You know, it's all part of the Skybound Energon universe, right? So I'm sure we'll see overlap between all three of those, or I guess maybe four properties with Void Rivals. But I'm excited to read it. It's been a long time since I've watched an episode of Mask, but I have fond memories of it. So I'm definitely picking that up, and I'm very intrigued by this new superhero series by Kirkman too. He's got, you know, I like most of what Kirkman does, so I'm sure I'll pick that up in July as well.
Yeah, so there's some good stuff out of Image. You know, we've also got announced this week Jay and Silent Bob, Jays of Future Past, written by Kevin Smith, that features Jay and Silent Bob meeting the Marvel Universe. It's a one shot. it is apparently that something that Kevin Smith talked about with Stan Lee when Stan Lee was in Mallrats, and it did, because Mallrats bombed, it never happened. And so apparently it's actually happening now, 30 something years later. It's a one shot. I'll read it. Yeah, I'll read it.
I think I'm out on that one.
Ah, Wayne will read it with me. I don't know. Maybe he will. We'll see.
Okay.
Also from DC Comics, we have Absolute Green Arrow by Porn Sack
Pistachio.
Yeah. Porn Sack Pistachio and Raphael Albuquerque.
That looks good.
It looks real good.
It looks great. It, you know, zombie Green Arrow out there fighting crime. I think that sounds great.
And apparently being hunted down by Dino Lance. They're saying it's a very, it's almost like a slasher movie. I mean, they're saying all the right things for me to read that book.
It sounds like villains to lovers to me.
That's exactly enemies to
lovers. What it sounds, yeah, exactly.
Enemies to lovers. Yeah.
From this new comic company, Alien Comic Books, that I'm not familiar with, we have Tarzan and Zorro, new iterations of Tarzan and Zorro.
Yeah, apparently Dynamite no longer has the publishing rights to that. So
yeah,
I was surprised. I hadn't seen anything that the rights had changed over.
Yeah, and I'm not even familiar with what Alien Books really is as a comic company.
I've never heard of them before.
Yeah, but I will say, you know, I was a little sad with that announcement, even though I will definitely pick up both of these books. Hopefully Alien Books will be publishing digitally, because you just never know with these smaller comic companies.
Right.
But I'm definitely interested, but it makes me a little sad that the Zorro that was being set up by Sean Gordon Murphy, you know, via that Kickstarter, doesn't seem to be doing any, you know, maybe not going forward, or maybe it was just a one-time thing, but I really enjoyed that book.
Yeah.
And Aaron, we've got two 40th anniversary celebrations this year. Actually, we have three 40th anniversary celebrations. One, Transformers the movie, celebrating its 40th anniversary with a, you know, they're re-releasing the movie in theaters. They're going to have a new toy line and a whole bunch of like, you know, anniversary elements throughout the year for Transformers the movie. You know, probably I think Wayne would be excited about that, but he's not on the podcast today. We have the 40th anniversary of The Dark Knight Returns.
Yes, I saw that
as well.
Yeah.
So there will be some celebratory stuff throughout the year as well. Hopefully not another sequel, because that is definitely law of diminishing returns on those sequels.
Definitely.
I don't think I even finished the third one.
Oof, it was rough. It was rough, Paul.
Yeah. And Aaron, Concrete is coming back from
Dark Horse Comics. I know! Paul Chadwick's Concrete from Dark Horse Comics. I know, Paul, you've never read a Concrete before, but
I have not.
They very much have an indie feel to them. You know, very much, you know, very sort of small dramas, small personal dramas, as opposed to, you know, cosmic stakes. It's just very personal, very human, even though you're talking about a guy trapped in this, you know, giant concrete body. But it is almost poetry. It is written so beautifully and illustrated so classically. I absolutely adore these books and am super excited that Paul Chadwick is returning to them, because it's been too long. It's been too long. I can't wait to jump into this new set of stories.
So lots of stuff. I mean, this is just the tip of the iceberg as far as, you know, what stuff they announced. They also announced the new Avengers Armageddon series from Marvel, which apparently is going to be their big thing later this year.
It certainly framed up a lot like Avengers Disassembled and how the new Avengers was launched. I mean, it feels very much a piece of New Avengers from Brian Michael Bendis. And, you know, before other people started saying, hey, this sounds like New Avengers, I was like, that sounds exactly like New Avengers, because I'm currently rereading the Bendis New Avengers book. I think I'm on the fourth omnibus of the New Avengers collections. And, you know, those books are great. I know that, you know, we complained a lot about the decompressed storytelling, but, you know, read collected, the stories are just, you know, sewn together beautifully. I love what he does there. And, you know, the characters that you never saw coming, you know, that Bendis was so good at. So I like what I'm hearing about this. It has been such a long time since I've enjoyed an Avengers book. I feel like Hickman was the last person who really had the tone correct for the Avengers. Everything else just, you know, since then, even Jason Aaron, I didn't feel like had it. So I'm eager to read it. And it's Chip Zdarsky. Is that who's doing
Zdarsky.
It?
Chip Zdarsky. Yep. Yeah. Chip Zdarsky.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm excited. I love Chip Zdarsky. I think he's great. So
yeah, and I'm bummed because, you know, I tried picking up Avengers in the post Blood Hunt era.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because it's written by Jeb. I don't remember the guy's last name from Marvel. Jed McKay. You know, he took on the Avengers after Blood Hunt, but I just could not get into it.
Yeah.
So which was a bummer, and I tried multiple times, but just couldn't do it. So, you know, Chip Zdarsky, I do like Chip Zdarsky. So hopeful, you know, I'm hopeful we'll, you know, it'll be something that I want to hop on. You know, and Andrew, you are the sole person reading Captain America on this podcast. Yeah.
And, you know, written by Chip Zdarsky. So obviously it's going to play into this new event. So yeah, it's basically slightly different version of Captain America. He's been involved in this kind of black op in Latveria, which I guess is going to lead right into the Red Hulk deciding he's going to be the ruler of Latveria. So, you know, it's okay. I wouldn't say it's something that you absolutely have to read. But it's a solid comic book, and so far, and just I guess got lucky that it's the one that's going to lead into this big event.
Well, and a couple of other things, just real quick before we move on to this week's comics, just because so much came out of Comics Pro, it's hard to keep track of all of it. But one that I'm both sad and excited about, guys, is a new Star Trek series, just called Star Trek, ongoing series in May 2026 from IDW Publishing. You know, they had their previous Star Trek series was the one that featured the return of Captain Sisko, you know, Benjamin Sisko as Captain.
Those were the Chris Cantwell books, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Chris Cantwell is returning to Star Trek in a new Star Trek volume set after the events of Star Trek Picard and featuring the Seven of Nine as the captain of the Enterprise G. So kind of a continuation of that that storyline in comic form, which I'm happy about because I was hoping that they would do something, sad about because I was hoping they would do a TV show.
Yeah. Paramount's crazy for not having paid Terry Metalis to do Star Trek Legacy. They're just stupid. And
Stupid decisions.
Yeah.
And we have a whole new universe coming from Dark Horse Comics and Jonathan Hickman. You know, he's been publishing on Substack this Three Worlds, Three Moons, sci-fi fantasy world story that, you know, Substack was like a big thing for 15 minutes, but none of us really hopped on it. But they are publishing those books in comic book form from Dark Horse Comics. Features creators like Jonathan Hickman, Nick Spencer, Mike Del Mundo, Mike Huddleston. And it's, you know, some series, some graphic novels, that kind of thing. But it's a whole Jonathan Hickman cosmic universe epic. And I'm
down for that.
Check it out.
Yeah, I love some John Hickman.
I do. You know, hopefully this is, you know, especially, you know, lately, Jonathan Hickman has been a little bit more human in his writing, a little, you know, a little less cold. So I'm looking forward to it. And that starts in July 2026. So lots of stuff coming our way this summer.
Sounds like a good summer.
Yeah. But this week, guys, we had a couple of comic books that we wanted to talk about, including the latest issue of Exquisite Corpses. And I have something negative to say about this book.
Oh, no. Was it over too soon? Is that what you're, would, you know, it was just not enough comic?
No, it's the art. I struggled a little bit, you know, like this, I will say Exquisite Corpses has not had a I think there is a general series artist, Michael Walsh, that does some of the book, but that, and I like his art, but when they have fill-in artists, I struggle with it a bit. And I did in this book. So this book had a bit of a fill-in artist, and I feel like some of the action beats or some of the storytelling didn't really work for me. Like there's a scene in the book where I'm trying to remember the character's name, but she's the mother character.
Yes.
She comes across a body and it's, you know, it's on top of a child's body and she thinks it's her son, Jason.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so, you know, she like, in my mind, she lifts the body off and then starts crying, like because she's but she doesn't. She doesn't quite.
She doesn't.
But it's the storytelling is like I'm confused because Jason's not dead. But left me a little bit confused.
That panel, I thought at first that she when that little E panel, I thought she'd managed to roll him over. But then I realized after I looked at it again, I realized she couldn't get him over and he fell back after her nail. Right. Two of her nails break off.
So all she's able to see is the small child's hand, right?
Yes.
Which is the evil kid, right? The
gamer kid or whatever. Correct. Yeah. And so it's and the person who's laying on top is the person that she left, you know, watching him. So that's why she assumes it's her child underneath his body.
Yeah.
But didn't the person she left watching him, wasn't he like connected to the family as well? Because it seemed like she really didn't care much for that guy. Like she's just kind of lifting his, like she had no remorse over that character's death either.
I think they were the neighbors. I think this couple, Zavi and God, I can't remember the dead one's name. That's bad. But they were. I can't remember if they were related to them or if they just lived next door. But and we're watching Jason for because she's a single mom. But yeah, I'd have to go back and look at that very first issue to know for sure. Or as Google it, I guess.
as a whole, I didn't have a problem with the art in the book. However, I do think this page, this panel, was problematic because it was so hard to understand what was happening, right?
Yeah.
I truly feel, you know, there's that moment where she's over the body and you can see that hand, and then there's a zoom in pan below it. And it's just not clear enough. You know, you need the camera to come out a little more to really emphasize, because the two images that you're given of that on that page just aren't enough. And then it's complicated in the action on the following page that you can't tell that she's not able to get it up, you know, to get the body to move so that she can reveal the child underneath. And it really leaves you, it takes you out of the story, because I remember sitting going, what the hell happened? You know, what's going on? And I had to figure it out, as opposed to the action being appropriately described visually. And it, you know, it would have benefited from it, you know, her making an exclamation of he's just too heavy, I can't move him. You know, I mean, and I know that's pedestrian.
Not showing the body lifting. Like, they literally do show the body lifting off the ground. Yeah. So I think that's part of my concern is, but she got the body up. And I mean, the next panel is supposed to show that it didn't really move, but it's the storytelling on the, and again, this is not a fault of the writing. This is a fault of this guest, of the guest artist.
I think it's also the fault of the editor. The editor should have said, you know, he should have rejected it and said, no, we got to do this again. You know, this isn't working. It's too important to this issue, this story, for it to have gone as it did. And I think that's a weak point. I thought the rest of the art was fine in the book. It didn't pull me out at all. And I thought the tone was, you know, on the same level as the rest of the stories that we've seen. But I, to your point, it really didn't work on those two pages. And unfortunately, the pages story, you know, I think that's a real challenge in this book.
So the mom's name is Audrey. The dead babysitter is Jason. No, sorry, Craig. The babysitter. Jason's the little kid.
Yes.
Yep.
So.
But I think they were just like neighbors that were babysitting for Audrey while she had to go back into work.
Craig was just such a big part of the first half of the series that, you know, kind of his death didn't feel as significant as I expected it to.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, and again, you know, the lack of any real remorse or care, you know, over his body, I was like, huh. But wasn't Craig like a big deal for the first 4 or 5 issues?
Right.
I probably just need to reread it, because because now we're almost a year into this book and I'm loving it. I have very few complaints about this overall book, but I do find, unfortunately, sometimes I've lost a little bit of a track of the non-costumed characters and who they actually are. Because, you know, and because they're kind of picking them off one by one, there's really only four of the lead characters that are actually alive at this point. There's the nurse.
Correct.
There's the mom.
Nope. Nurse is dead. Oh, you mean EMT. You mean Laura.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, the EMT. Yeah, sorry. The EMT. Yes. Sorry, you are right. The nurse is dead. The EMT, Craig. No, not Craig.
Zavi.
No, who's the kid?
Jason.
Jason. Yeah. Jason, Zavi, and the mom. Those are like the four non-bad guy characters that are actually still alive. Because especially as, you know, spoilers in this issue, Mike.
Method Mike.
Got an AC unit dropped on his face.
Poor Mike.
So
poor
Mike. I gotta say,
you knew that guy had to die at some point. So
yeah, I like Rascal Randy's style.
I do too. I do really feel like I need to read all of these again.
Yeah.
You know, going into the final rounds, because it is so easy to forget some of the stuff that's been laid down, you know, as these are, you know, month after month, it's hard to retain some of that stuff. So I do feel like I would benefit from a more collected read of these books.
Agreed. I really, in this one, enjoyed the interaction between Laura and the groundskeeper. I thought that was very, very badass, especially how it ended. that guy was cold as ice. And then, you know, the battle between the recluse and the fox mask killer was good. And then, of course, mm-hmm. the continued plotting behind the scenes between the Carolina sisters. I thought Lady Carolina had a great pivot, you know, looking to kind of betray but taking Massachusetts' core idea, but pivoting to one of the other families that she feels are more easily manipulated by her. Mm-hmm. I'm liking the behind the scenes politicking and plotting as well.
Yeah. I mean, I love the book. I just, for me, you know, especially because I'm coming to a point. Unfortunately, sometimes it's because of the fill-in artists or, you know, the artists that they have. I don't 100% remember what happened to everyone.
Right.
And I know Andrew has taken notes probably with every issue. Because I remember when this book first came out, Andrew was literally taking notes on characters and states and things like that. Yeah. So I haven't been as detailed in my read, because I mean, I read comics before I go to sleep. Like I go to bed, you know, I read the comics, and sometimes like if I fall asleep, I'll try again the next day. If I feel like, oh, I really don't remember what happened in that book. But this one, though it certainly doesn't feel like a deep read because there's so many character interactions and so much betrayal and backstabbing and stuff like that. I do feel like I'm probably going to need, and they're bite-sized reads. They're really not that bad. So I'll probably reread it in time for the finale, because I think it's 13 issues, right?
I believe that's correct.
It's weird. I've read different places, 12 and 13, mm-hmm. but I think 13.
I think they decided 13 after they started. I think it was originally 12, and they decided that there was enough content, 13.
Well, and that's just this volume, I'm assuming, right? Because there's, I mean, I can't imagine they're just going to stop and then do a car setting and everything.
I just based on the conversations that you know, we're privy to, you know, behind the scenes in the book, you know, the wealthy people all talking amongst themselves, it does feel like they're setting up for a second volume.
Yeah. There's no way this is going to just stop in two issues.
Yeah.
The creative team has said that the Exquisite Corpses universe will continue, but I haven't read anywhere where they specify whether it's going to be a prequel, whether it's going to be like, you know, back at the founding. Is it going to be the next, you know, 5 years later, the next one? Is it going to be what happens in between? I haven't read anywhere what it's going to be like. They have said that it's going to continue the universe will continue in some form.
Yeah.
So I'm definitely looking forward to it. To seeing how this wraps up and what's next. And, you know, I would love to figure out how we could do some type of, I don't know that we can do an actual play of the card game, but we'll have to figure something out, because I'm genuinely looking forward to when this thing expands out to, I think it was announced as either a TV show or a movie, but like they've got long-term plans for Exquisite Corpses, and I am here for it.
Yep. Well, something else I'm excited about is this new comic, D'Ork. Which Paul had clued me into. It's fantastic, Paul.
Aaron, I'm assuming you didn't get a chance to read this one.
I started it. I have not finished it. Like yourself, I tend to read books at bedtime, and I fell asleep about three pages in.
Yeah, no, I get it. You know, I talked a little bit about this last week, but this is a situation where there's the lands of Sundarain, and you know, they're split between the light lands and the dark lands by this realm called the Scar, right down the middle, and it's just kind of this unending battlefield of the forces of light and the forces of dark, and it's about the trials and tribulations of a half dwarf, half orc, who lives in the Scar. And finds himself caught in the middle between both the light and the dark, and you know what happens there. And it's I'm making it sound a lot more serious than it actually is. It's actually quite a humorous book. But you know, there it's apparently doing very well in sales. It's going back for second printings. Like it's you know, kind of this sleeper hit. And so, you know, I mentioned it last week how much I enjoyed it. Andrew, what'd you think?
It's great. It's very humorous. You know, the setup is very much kind of epic fantasy with this 2,000-year war between light and dark. But in application, it's really it's a comedy, which I enjoy in my fantasy books. So far at least, most of the comedy is focused between this hybrid half light orc, half dark orc, in his magic shield, which has this very creepy giant eyeball on the front of it. I don't know how you feel about it, Paul. That shield kind of, the design kind of creeps me out.
You would think it would, it wouldn't work. Like, wouldn't you just like poke it in the eye? But maybe it's a magical eye and can't.
Well, it's got that metal lid on it.
The metal eyelid. That's true. Yeah. That's true. It could just close its eye.
That's right.
Yeah, it's almost like a buddy cop type movie with the two of them out, you know, on their own against the world. But it's pretty funny. And it has a lot of the kind of classic epic fantasy tropes around it. So I enjoyed the humor, and I think that's the main thing that will draw people to it, or is drawing people to it, is it's just a funny book.
The artwork reminds me very much of Phil Folio. Familiar with
him? Yeah.
He used to do like the Myth Adventures covers, and did a bunch of D&D related art for like Dragon Magazine, etc. And it is very Folio style, and I like that style. So
agreed.
You know, I picked up. You know, I love a good fantasy book, but they're hard to come by in my mind. You know, the humor is either too forced, you know, not natural enough, or it's just a level of fantasy that doesn't intrigue me, or there's just no humor at all. You know, obviously one of my favorite comic books series of all time is Bone. And I'm not comparing Dork to Bone after one issue. But I do feel like it's almost like a more violent version of something set in that universe. And so it's definitely scratching me right where I itch in this first issue. I'm hopeful to see where it goes. And, you know, hopefully it continues being fun, because I'm definitely picking up the next issue.
Cool. Well, I will finish reading this one, and we'll probably get in for the next issue as well.
So, hey, Paul. Andrew. Well, hold on. Andrew.
Oh, yeah.
Andrew had a recommendation, or maybe not. I don't know.
And actually, let me start this off by, you know, if you went to the comic book store this week and you were trying to buy a first issue of White Sky, you may have had some trouble doing that because, like Dork, White Sky sold out. Image is having a really good February, selling out their books. You know, White Sky, you know, is sold out. It's gone back to print. Dork sold out. It's gone back to the printers. I didn't pick up White Sky. I know, Paul, you did, but didn't get an opportunity to read it for the show today. But Andrew read White Sky. Talk to us, Andrew.
So I was there at the comic book store, as I do, and the cover caught me, so I picked it up. It was actually the last copy on the shelf at my store, so glad I didn't get there any later than I did. But it's written by William Harms, who I wasn't really familiar with. It looks like some of his big... he did a series called The Impaler back in like the mid-2010s. I did another one called 39 Minutes. Nothing I've read before. He's done some work for Marvel on different books, but... the general premise is kind of centers on a father, son, David and Violet, in this very post-apocalyptic world. And there's these creatures, which are ghosts, it appears. So it's a little undefined. But there's the common trope where, you know, when an extra supernatural entity appears, like it'll get cold in a room. You'll see frost touch form on a window. Well, apparently these ghosts are so powerful that, you know, they will change the weather. You know, the rain will change to snow when they're around. And there's a lot of questions, not a lot of answers in the first. But David ends up getting separated from Violet. Violet's now on her own in a bad position. And reading the back matter, William Harms talked about how, you know, David will still be part, the dad is still going to be a key character, but it's really the story is going to focus on Violet going forward. You know, her journey, the horror she faces, the people she meets is what the books, the comic book's going to focus on. So the art's done by Jean-Paul Mavinga, and it's pretty much enjoyable. There's a few pages where I'm kind of staring at these ghosts trying to get a better sense of them, but I think maybe that's intentionally done because that's part of the horror, part of the mystery maybe. So it's hard to know if it's going to be good after one book, but I'm definitely one issue, but I'm definitely interested in continuing on and finding more out about it.
Yeah, you know, I'm definitely interested in it. Like I said, I didn't get a chance to pick it up. The cover art seems pretty decent. I don't know if that's the same artist that does the interior of the book.
Ooh, let me look. Cover A.
So assuming pages, maybe.
Yeah. Looking, cover A was done by the same artist. There's, I guess, four different covers, but cover A, which I think is the one I have, is done by Jean-Paul.
Okay. Yeah. So I'm intrigued. You know, like we talked about this in our annual Funny Books Awards, just trying new stuff. So yeah, figure maybe I'll give this one a shot too.
Very good. Hey, Paul.
Yes, sir.
What's coming out next week?
Well, next week we have, I would say a little bit of a lighter week, but we've got some new issues coming out from DC Comics. We get the latest issues of Superman and Justice League Unlimited and the final issue of Justice League versus Godzilla versus Kong 2. I honestly haven't been reading this book. I think I picked up the first issue, and not that I disliked it, I just haven't picked it up.
Yeah, I had decided to pick it up collected.
Yeah, so I'll probably, now I'll get caught up. And from Marvel Comics, we have the return of the Punisher in a brand new ongoing series. The Punisher has returned. And
this is Frank Castle.
It is Frank Castle. I got to tell you, I feel like I'm good to not hop into that because I feel like I was good with the way Frank Castle's story ended. So I know it's comics. I know that's not how it works. Characters like that don't get endings. But as long as I don't read any more Punisher books, I feel like I've gotten my ending on the Punisher. See,
and that's how I feel about Jean Grey. She died, in X-Men 137. So, she never came back to life.
Yeah. And from Image Comics, we get the finale of Escape, the end of the first story arc, I should say, from Rick Remender and Daniel Acuña. Aaron, you had expressed that this was a pretty solid series, and the first issue the first story arc should be wrapping up next week.
Terrific. Looking forward to that.
All right.
Well, hey, we want to know what you thought of this week's books. Give us a shout at ideology@gmail.com. If we use your comments on the show, you could win a Ideology of Madness surprise.
You can also hit us up on social media, IOMGeek on Facebook, Instagram, and X.
What a deal. Well, hey, guys, I am looking forward to talking more comics with you next week. And, maybe we'll figure out a way to get Paul to watch some Star Trek.
Maybe.
Probably not. But, we'll give it a shot.
You could try.
That's right.
All right. Catch you then.
Bye, guys.
See ya.
Podcast theme music graciously provided by Mark Andrew Pope. For more information, visit markandrewpope.com. Funny Books with Aaron and Polly is a production of ideologyofmadness.com. No Spider-Man clones were harmed in the production of this podcast.